You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hi, I'm Dr. Roger Macias, and you're watching the Best Practices Show with Kurt Barron.
Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show. We take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the country. And if you're growing your practice and you're trying to bring in another dentist, or if you're a young dentist trying to find the right practice, I've got the show for you. And today we're going to be talking about millennials in dentistry and looking for a mentor or a tormentor with my good friend, Roger Macias. You do not want to miss this. This guy is awesome, and I love this man. So, and he's full of a wealth of knowledge. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You'll love this. Now, couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching this, if you have questions and you're thinking about it, you're listening to Roger, add questions to the feed and I'll dish them to Roger right away. And we'll get them straight from the man while we got him on here. And then if you've got some questions that show up later on while you're watching, add them to the feed. You'll see Roger's good at, you're good at social media. You're out there responding. Yeah. So I can't even thank you guys enough. I got stacks and stacks of, requests for things that you guys want to see. And we're lining up shows, doing the best we can. We're going to be doing a lot with some great, incredible clinicians over the next couple of weeks. Keep sending them to us. We got over 39,000 followers on Facebook. Over 150,000 of you have visited us on iTunes. And all I can say is thank you, thank you, thank you. So my guest today, Roger, the man, the myth, the legend, Roger Macias. Now, Roger, I get a chance to see you all the time. You're at all the big meetings. You're a heavy influencer in dentistry. You're always on the cutting edge of what's going on there in the CE world. And I know you. A lot of people watching know you. Some good friends of ours mention you all the time. But if somebody's watching this and they're a young dentist, they don't know who you are, give us a little story on your background, who you are, where you practice, and how you got to where you're at.
Well, I'm the husband of Esther. That's first.
There you go. There you go.
We've been married now 31 years, and I practice here in San Antonio, Texas. And I've been in practice, gosh, now 35 years, which is hard to believe. And have two beautiful kids. My daughter, who's a fourth year OBGYN resident up at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, and then I've got my son Trey, who is 180 degrees of the spectrum. He's a professional musician in Los Angeles, California. So he's got two great kids. One's a musician and one's a physician. So it's all good. I've been practicing now. My practice is pretty much, I do a lot of sleep dentistry. I do a lot of comprehensive, complete dentistry. Doing a lot more on trying to take care of the patient as a whole versus just taking care of a tooth. And I look back at Dr. Pankey when he said, I never saw a tooth walk into my office. And I take that to heart. There's always a person to touch that. So I have my office is pretty much relationship based. My practice has been that way. Didn't start out that way. It started out as it was a little bit more difficult. I was running out of one office, working for another guy. And so after about 4 years of that, I knew what I did not want to do. And so I moved on to my own practice. And so started at that time with just one hygienist, one assistant, and one front desk. And we made it happen. We've kind of grown into that. I've got two dental assistants, two hygienists, and one front desk administrator. They all are just an amazing team that I have. So they're just the nicest ladies. My hygienist has been with me 23 years.
Wow.
My dental assistant has been with me now 13 years. My other dental assistant's been with me about 7 years. We just hired this other dental assistant. I mean, hygienist. She's been with me now for a little over a year. But previous to her, my hygienist was with me over 22 years. So, okay. But she's moved on and now is a flight attendant. So,
all right. Cool. And there's so many things that I'm going to ask you about, but you and I were talking, and I'm a big fan of the 7-3. We had Tom Dawson on yesterday. We were talking about straight eight and you're like, well, I kind of trimmed that up. I do 7 to 2:30. How can you just shed some light on that? Because I do run into people out there like no dentist can do that 7 to 2:30. How long have you been doing 7 to 2:30? Is that a straight through? Do you take a lunch? How,
like, give us well, some you perspective. Know, they give me my, I say they give me, they run my office. My staff gives me about 30 minutes to grab a bite to eat. So I usually, somewhere I work it in there, but I'm, we start at 7 with our morning huddle. And then we finish our morning huddle by about 7:20. And then we get ready for the day. The assistants are actually, and the hygienists get here like at 6:30 in the morning. And sometimes they're here at 6 o'clock. It depends on what we're doing that day, and they're getting ready to go. And then we start at 7:30, and we block schedules. So then we go straight through. I usually take a break right around maybe 11:30, and then I finish up with I'll do a new patient around noon and till around 2 o'clock or so, and then we kind of wind down the day and are done by around 2:30.
That is great. Awesome. So that's not even 8 hours. I love it. I love it. And would you say, hey, look, if you create enough value, you have a great relationship, you can get patients to come in the hours that you work. You don't have to work on Friday nights and Saturdays and Sundays, right?
No, but I did at the beginning. Right. Yeah. In fact, I was working when I first got into practice. I was the days that the owner dentist was not there. He'd leave at 4 and I'd come in at 4 and I'd work till 9. And then I was working Fridays because he wasn't working Fridays. And then I'd work Saturdays because the office was available. So I'd see patients on Fridays. And then little by little, as I started noticing that the patients that were coming in on Saturday were patients that I was seeing during the week. And I was like, well, why do I want to come in on a Saturday if I'm seeing them during the week? Right. Or we would have a family, like let's say a family of 4, and we had them schedule like hygiene and me have doing a procedure. And then they'd say, oh, you know what? The lake is so beautiful today. We're going to the lake. And then I'd be sitting there by myself twiddling my thumbs. Yeah. So after a while, I decided, okay, I'm cutting back. So I got rid of the Saturdays. And then I just started doing to Friday. And then as I started working more and more and started finding out a little bit more of the philosophies of Pete Dawson and L.D. Pankey and stuff, I started thinking, if it's my practice, I can practice any way I want to. Mm-hmm. As long as I can make the bills and take care of my team, you know, how can I do it? And I found out that if I cut back, I actually was more productive during those times. And so that's kind of what I've been doing now. We still come in. We come in and we work 8 to 1 on Mondays and Wednesdays, and then we come back at 2:30 to about 4:30 on Mondays and Wednesdays. But Tuesdays and Thursdays it's 7 to 2:30.
Okay, 7 to 2:30.
Yeah,
yeah. So tell us about your journey. So when you were working those weekends, now did you find your way to the Pankey Institute? Because this is what we're going to be talking today is about millennials in dentistry, the mentor, because it's different now than it was. Like back when I got started, and I'm younger than you, they used words like preceptorships and things like that. And I remember, you know, we talked, names came up like Hildebrand and all these great mentors and people. They just say, come to my office. I'll show you everything. I'll show you what not to do also. And today's day and age, it's a little bit different. So talk about kind of the evolution of your mentors in your life. And now you're looking to mentor and what's happened in that journey.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I can remember starting to do that when I was in dental school. There were a couple of our faculty members that had their practices across the street from the dental school. And so whenever I wasn't in dental school, if I didn't have any classes or anything, I went over there and I hung out at their office. I would just sit on the floor and watch them practice and see how they did things. And there's a guy like named John Lee, who's just a super nice guy. And John and I have been buddies forever. And in fact, one of my dental assistants was John Lee's dental assistant. And so she now works with me. So I started just going and hanging out with him. And he was kind of, I would say he was like my first mentor there. And then little by little, when I got into practice, I would call him and say, hey, I've got a case. What do you think? You know, and he'd show me. And then that kind of, he and Jack Shirley, I didn't even know Jack.
I love Jack. Yeah.
We were sitting there and, you know, and I'm between. So I can tell you, and you know all of them. I mean, I was like John Lee, Jack Shirley, Bill Robbins, you know, I mean, all these guys that I kind of turned to and say, like, how would you do things? Like, what would you do? And then finally, I remember Jack told me one day, he goes, hey, you have a patient, and her brother is the CEO of the Penke Institute. And I was like, Chris Sager? And I know Chris Sager. And he was like, yeah. And he goes, he's from San Antonio, but he wants to know, are you treating his sister well? And I was like, well, I hope I am. And then it was Jack who kind of sent me on going to the Penke Institute. But before that, I came, it was the most amazing thing. I got the you know, one of these Dental Practice Today or something like that, one of those magazines that came out. And on the front of the cover, it said, how to put your practice in the top 10%.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that mean? Is it top 10%? You see, because I had a magazine the month before, it said, how to stop being a procrastinator. And I looked at it and I said, you know what? I'll read this later. And I thought, you know, that's not very good. So I said, I'm going to read this article. And it was by Peter Dawson. So I read it and then I was hooked. And then I found out that Peter Dawson was going to be here in San Antonio giving a lecture. So I went to his lecture and it was just like amazing. And so I said, that was like in December. In January, I was already taking his first course out in St. Petersburg. And then I took his next few courses there. And then at the end of that, after I was in Highlands, North Carolina with him, I said, now, Pete, what do I do now? I've taken all your courses. What do I do? He says, now you need to go to the Penke Institute. And I was like, all right. So I signed up for the Penke Institute, happened to be at the Young Dentist Conference in Washington, D.C., ran into a friend of mine, Richard Hunt, and I was sitting there with Richard, and Richard, I saw him on an elevator. He and his wife were coming down the elevator. Never met the guy before in my life. I'm sitting there, and Richard says, he goes, oh, San Antonio. I go, hey, North Carolina. I said, I was just there. I went to Highlands. I saw Pete Dawson. And he goes, yeah. He goes, in fact, Pete Dawson, I know we're actually going to Penke in September. I was like, I'm going to Penke in September. Next thing we know is that now we're going through Penke. We went through all the continuums together.
Yeah.
And then from there, that's how I got to meet Lee Brady. And I've got all my connections, Mark Clive, and you know the rest. And so that's how I started my journey. And it has taken me from just to the next level of being able to do the dream practice that I wanted. And it's been good. But it didn't start out that way, because I remember the first week that I started in dental practice, I looked at my bank account, at the old San Antonio Savings Bank account, and I looked inside there, and I had graduated from dental school, had these three letters behind my name, D period, S period, and at the end of that thing, it had $68 in the bank account. And so I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be an uphill battle. And it sure enough, it was, but I just, you know, I started doing my best, trying to make sure that the type of practice, even without knowing what I knew through Institute Penke or Dawson or Spear or any of those guys at Coys and all those guys, that they were the big gurus at the time, I knew that I needed to treat patients like a human being. And that was the big success of my practice, of being able to treat patients relationship based. And that has been just a game turner for me. So,
yeah, well, it's an amazing journey that you've been on. And you were talking, you know, we were talking about this beforehand, and you're looking to mentor. And let's talk about the millennials in dentistry. And let's just preface this by kind of, you know, I don't want to just put everybody in a box, because I shared with you, even when I speak, I'll get feedback and direct email saying, hey, from millennials saying, hey, look, you can't do this. You can't throw all millennials in the box, because you guys are so quick to say that we're lazy, whatever. There's a lot of us out there that are working hard. We want to be excellent. And so let me just start the conversation by that. But tell us about what you're noticing in dentistry as you look to mentor, and then describe the whole tormentor thing too.
Well, I got that tour mentor from the television show Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh yeah,
because you know, he comes home to his house one day and he goes, oh, he was looking for. They're looking for Raymond's dad, and he was like, he was my mentor. And he goes, your mentor? You mean your tour mentor? And and so I thought, well, that's what I want. I want to be a mentor. I don't ever want to be a tour mentor, because there were a couple of practices that I walked in to say, hey, can I, you know, and I watch, and they were like, no, mm-hmm. you can't come in my office. I'm sorry, but you know, it's a private office. I was like, oh man, I just wanted to see how you do things. You know, I was trying to go out and get from the best, and I'd heard some of these people were the best at what they did, but it just didn't work out. And so I thought, okay, well, I never want to be like that. I always want to have, if somebody calls and says, hey, I'd like to come in and look in your office and just see how you do things. I was like, come on. You know, you don't even have to tell me when you're coming. You just come in and anytime. Office is quite open. Anytime you want to come in and see. And so I actually have been working with the Advanced Education General Dentistry up at the dental school. I lectured to them. I brought them into my office. I saw them at a dental society meeting one time. There were a whole group of them sitting around this one table. And I said, I got talking to one of them. And I said, look, if you guys ever want to come to my office, you come to my office, I'll provide pizza and beer and I'll lecture. And one time I had, you know, I was thinking, I got all these lectures I can bring out and I can just show them all this good stuff. And all they wanted to do was talk.
Right.
They just wanted to talk. And so it's a different mindset. Not like you said, not in a bad way, not in a lazy way, but just a different mindset of what they're encountering in the real world, especially mm-hmm. with a lot of the different practice models that are out there, from fee-for-service to DSOs kind of thing. And so I'm very compassionate when I hear that. And I've actually told a couple of people when they've said, hey, I'm looking to go practice with this person. And I just kind of say, well, can I be truthful with you? I don't think that's the right practice for you, you know? Right. And so just to be honest with them, because of what situations that I may know, but not in a bad way, because I never want to talk bad about anyone, but just to say, okay, I don't think, you know, the cube has to meet the square. I mean, it's got to be right. Inside for that puzzle to meet. And if it's not making it, you know, I think maybe you should look elsewhere. Because if you get tied into a contract or something that has all these restrictive covenants, next thing you know, you're not even practicing in San Antonio. And so, mm-hmm. or wherever they may end up going. And so I've got young dentists. I've got, you know, third, fourth year. I lecture to the first year dental students every year. In fact, I'm lecturing next month to the first year dental students. And I always try to talk to them about what a dream practice is about, just to get them excited about that, because their next 3 or 4 years is going to be stuck in how to learn how to cut an MOD. And so me, it's like, okay, but look, you got to be thinking bigger than that, thinking outside the box, thinking that there's going to be life past dental school.
Right.
And so that's that for me, that's been exciting to be able to, and let me tell you what, they're taking advantage of it. However, there are some that think they, especially in a world of instant gratification, that my download speed is 0.5 seconds. When I remember with Netscape, it would say, click to download and I'll see you tomorrow when I get back to the office.
Right.
You know, it's like a totally different ball game. So, but that to me, I'd love to be able to do that so we can get the right person in the practice. And I don't care if they work with me or they don't work with me. I had you remember David Little, you know, David.
Yeah.
Little. David Little and I had each other on speed dial. It was like, you know, press 9 and it went mm-hmm. right to David. And we were like, okay, look at this. What am I doing? Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's how we used to do it. But now I look to the people that really can, that I can help. And so it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And I think the big thing is there's so many, like, it's so valuable what you do, Roger. And even when I go to the dental school, I don't quite have the moxie maybe that you do. We got to bait them with pizza. And then I've learned you give them pizza after you're done talking. Cause yeah. I used to bring the pizza at the beginning. And I'm like, where did we go? Wait, come back. And the thing that I try to tell every dentist is, look, there's no one model out there. The coolest part about dentistry is you can do it however you want to do it. And a lot of times dentists think, well, I got to go in and be an associate, then a partner. And that's how I find a mentor. But it's true. You can start your own practice and you can still find a mentor. You don't always have to combine a business. The thing that you're so good at and you're helping is that you got to figure out who you are so that you can go into an environment and you can just, I have one goal for every dentist that I coach is that I just want you to love going to work. Say, this is how I do it. And I love it. When you get into a situation when you're doing it against your core values, that's probably when the ugly stuff comes out as a younger dentist. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you're looking at $68 in your checking account and, you know, somebody comes in with that needs three crowns and you don't know why those teeth broke, and now I'm going to go ahead and prep them for three crowns, and then the next thing you know is all three temporaries break, and then you're like, I'm lacking something here, but I only have $68 in my bank account, and you almost get to into the idea that you need to diagnose via your pocketbook versus diagnose what's the best for the patient. And I think once you come to grips with that always ethically that you're sitting there doing the right thing for the person. I had the best when I was a kid. The reason I became a dentist, you want to know why?
Yes, I do.
The reason I became a dentist, I went to the dentist, Dr. John Cochran, nicest guy in the world. His son's is an orthodontist here in San Antonio, but Dr. Cochran was the nicest guy. I walked into his office, and they did a cleaning. He had this hygienist, Carolyn. She was the most beautiful lady, had the most beautiful eyes. I'm 13 years old. I'm thinking, this lady's gorgeous. They finished with that. I get to go to a toy box and take out one of these planes that you can wind up. And I thought, oh, my God, man, this guy has toys in his office. You got toys, and you can do dentistry? Oh, man, this is great. I'm going to be a dentist. And so I already knew I was going to be a dentist, you know, when I was a little, even younger than 13 years old. I was I think like 6 or 7 actually when I first went in. And so I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is what I want to do. And then I loved biology and I loved art because I paint and I draw and all these type of things. And I thought, where can you put the two together with art and biology? And that to me is kind of like what set the wheels in motion, you know, that's kind of where I kind of see some of these things going with some of the youth, you know, and trying to keep them motivated as to the being purposeful and being passionate. My dad used to say, I don't care what you do in your life, just be the best at it. If you want to be a beachcomber and walk up and down collecting shells, just be the best beachcomber you can be. Mm-hmm. And so like when my daughter wanted to be a physician, I was like, man, she's great at that. My son, he wanted to be a musician. I had a little bit of angst about that because I was thinking, oh my God, that's a tough life.
Right.
And you got to set yourself apart. But my son has got this amazing mind and he's been able to say, yeah, it's just not a musician. I'm passionate about it. Well, if you're passionate about it, son, then you go for it. I was like, you go. We backed him 100% when he decided to take off to do his thing. So,
yeah, and that's awesome. That is awesome. And then, you know, when you look at the career path and talking about these people, because Roger, you're at the intersection of, you know, your career in dentistry and mentoring. Let's go from both sides of this. Let's talk about the millennial. What would you like? If I'm a young dentist, maybe I'm a millennial. What would you like? Give me your steps. What would you tell me to do to be successful? And then let's also take a look at it from the mentor side. Like, because I just had a conversation this morning with a good friend of mine, great dentist, an amazing dentist. You know him. And he's looking at possibly bringing in another dentist to mentor him. And let's talk honestly about that. Like, there are some dentists that can mentor, and there are some dentists that probably shouldn't mentor within their practice. So let's first go to the millennial side of things. If I'm a young dentist, what would you say? What would you tell me?
If I was a young dentist right now, I'd beat every door down and just say, man, I can feel a vibe here. This vibe of this office is something enthusiastic. The dentist is very friendly, whether he or she are what type of patients are they bringing in? What is a staff like? What does a team look like? The team's happy, or is the team, you know, walking around? And I would look into that first and just, you know, be open to say, hey, you know, I'd love to come to see what you're doing. Not to say that you're going to be coming into the practice, but you never know how these relationships begin. I've had a couple of that I've sit there and say, man, this person would be awesome in my practice. Mm-hmm. And I had a young man that I was trying to get in here, and he was awesome, but his career path took him to out of state. And so, those are the type of things where you have to go through this. Because I've had some people come in and say, I want to work for you for a year, and then I want you to provide me patients, and then at the end of the year, if I decide to leave, I'm going to leave, and I'll take those patients with me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to me, that's not the best way to handle this, because there's nothing in it for the mentor dentist. And so as a mentee, as somebody walking in, I'd say I'd be very open to say, I'll do whatever it takes if you need me to get out there and sweep floors and do, because that's what I did. That's what I did. I got in there and just said, I'll do whatever I need to do. You need me to order. You need me to do this. And then in the meantime, I was actually doing continuing education. I did my first continuing education class like a month out of dental school. And I just went in because I wanted to go see what it was like, to see what it is to do with this stuff called composite resins. We had never really used much of that. And it was just, you know, you mix it and shove it in as quick as you can before it set up. But so I took a course, and that just changed the way I did dentistry. And you could offer so many things. But millennials need to be open to the suggestion of being able to walk in and say, hey, whatever you need me to do, you need me to do all your MOD composites or amalgams or whatever it is on number 15. Because I was kidding around with Bill Robbins. Bill and I were talking and said, hey, whenever I retire, I'm going to name my office the 45-12-13. 45-12-13. I was like, 4-5-12-13. Those are the only teeth we're going to treat right there. Number 4, number 5, and you can treat number 12, number 13. That's all, because he's left-handed and I'm right-handed. So, you know, so that's the only, I'd love to do that. What a practice to have, you know. But, and then let whoever else come in and do whatever they want to do. But it's because some of these, I'm mentoring right now this young millennial. I mean, she's amazing, amazing, amazing. And she has no fear of taking out third molar. She has no fear of doing root canal. She has no fear of doing periodontal surgery. She has done an AEGD residency. And I mean, these are the type of things that, you know, they've educated themselves. They feel so positive about what they can do. And it's just, it needs somebody to just say, okay, well, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's see. If you love it, do it. If you don't love it and it's giving you angst, then you need to do that something else. And to me, I was awesome at, well, I should say that, I'm trying to be very humble, but I really did root canals very well. Mm-hmm. But I was always running late, and I did not like that. Right. I did extractions really well, but I was always running late. It's like two hygienists, got to check both hygiene, and you're running late, and you broke a root tip, and I was just like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. Yeah. So I don't. I do what I love now, so and I enjoy doing it every minute of the day. There's not a day that it doesn't come in that I just say, oh, man, I'm able to problem solve something, and I love it. So if you can get somebody who wants to come in and say, hey, doc, you know, you do what you love. Let me handle all this other stuff. Man, I would be like, this would be a marriage made in heaven, you know?
Yeah. So, and you're intimately involved in organized dentistry and CE and all this. Do you think conditions are different, that much different for a new dentist coming out than they were when you were coming out? You know, let's add some perspective to this, because some people say, oh, it's so much harder. But Roger, I can remember the days 20 some years ago when I got started in this business, some of the biggest authority leaders in dentistry saying, PPOs will be gone. It'll only be cash and HMO. Dentists were supposed to go away when fluoride came into the scene. So everybody's been predicting that it's over soon, but it never is over. So I guess adding all of that, is it different now for dentists than it was when you got out?
I think that if I can see from what I've visited with dentists all over the United States when I go to all these meetings, the main thing that I see is the debt load coming out for the dental student. They have a huge debt load, and that is a
they need. What ranges are you seeing? Like I hear all over the board.
Yeah, I don't know what you've heard, but I've heard anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000 or more, and that's a big debt load. Because if you think about that, if you have somebody's practice that, maybe, let's say, just taking a number out there, let's say the practice is worth $800,000 and you want to buy that practice, but you already have a debt load of $250,000. Now you're about $1.1 million into this thing. What bank is going to lend a young dentist that amount of money?
Well, you don't have a home or a nice car, too, because you don't want anybody to think you're not successful.
Exactly.
You know, and
I've been there. My dental assistant drove better cars than I ever did. I had a little brown Toyota Corolla that I drove for about 6-7 years, and I called it the Roach because it was nice and brown. And that was, I mean, that's, you got to pay the price, you know. I think, you know, they always say Napoleon Hill, like, you got to step up and pay the price. And so if you humble yourself as a young dentist and get out there, know that you have this debt load, but know that you how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, and give yourself a plan that I'm going to attack this debt this little bit over the next several years, then I'll get to myself in a position that I'll be able to have what I have. It's just, I think of there's some guy out there that says you got to live on rice and beans, you know, every once in a while just to make it happen, you know, and like he says, you got to live like no one else so that someday you can live like no one else. And it's an important thing. I mean, I know I did it. You know, I'm certainly not in the same an economic situation that I was when I first got out into practice, you know, and, you know, lived in an apartment. My wife and I were just newly married and lived in an apartment, and you know, like I said, dental assistants had better cars than I did. And she worked a job at the bank, and I worked in my office, and I put in long hours, and I tried to make it go and kept doing internal marketing as best I could. I used to, back in the days when you would write a check, mm-hmm. I would write a check for a dollar. I would write a check, and they go, "Oh, you're a dentist." I go, "Yeah, I am." And they go, mm-hmm. "Oh, do you have a dentist?" And they go, "No." I go, "Well, here's my card." So just by getting my name out there. Right. And then I would do Boy Scout troop meetings and Explorer Scout meetings and go to civic clubs and Rotary and just go put my name out there and people, before you knew it. But you have to remember, I come from a big Catholic family. So I had instant 43 first cousins that wanted to come get their dental work done. So, yeah.
I kind of, and you're too nice of a guy to say no. So there you go.
Yeah. Put me into debt, but...
Hey, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
You know, so, and from your, you know, you're at the wonderful stages of your career. Give us some perspective on what mentoring looks like for you, because you do have a great schedule that lends itself, but is it all it's cracked up to be? Like, and what would you say to somebody else who says, "Hey, Roger, I'm at a point where I would like to mentor somebody, but I'm not having that much fun about with it."
If you're not mentoring, I think every dentist to be out there to give back. I mean, every dentist give back in many different ways.
Right.
But to get back to those that really need it, it's the dental student, the young dentist. We need to go focus on the young dentist, the ASDA groups and American Student Dental Association groups. I see them. I work with them all the time with the American Dental Association, with the things that I'm doing. And I get to visit one-on-one with some of these young dentists to see the misery that some of them are going through, because it's just a tough world out there. You know, it's different, like I said, different model. But, you know, I would be open to mentoring. You know, Lee Brady and I had this conversation not too long ago about the perfect world for me would be to have somebody come into my practice that I could sit there and, you know, they do their work. I get to do what I really like to do and just do that all day. And they can do the other things. And then when they have a problem, then I can help them and mentor them. For example, I'm coming up with a lecture right now on how to handle implant failures on old implant systems.
Okay.
Because they're coming back full circle 25 years later, that little screw breaks or something. Right. And do you have that stuff in your... A new dentist would not know what to do, only because they haven't had that experience that fortunately I've had over the years to fix those old implant systems. And how do you fix that? And to me, it's I take an old chisel and I'm on the grinding stone and go, "I think this will work." And, you know, and I... it's amazing to be able to put that problem solving thing and into practice. And then, so Lee and I were talking about how it would be great to be able to have somebody in that you could just mentor and be there positive with them and not sit there and scold them and point them down like a tormentor, but to sit there and say, "I'm going to help lift you, because if I can get you to do what you want and enjoy it, then I'm going to get what I want." And mm-hmm. So that way it's a win-win. But to be quite honest, I find that that's a very difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult thing for somebody to want to commit to kind of want to do that with me. There's a lot of different scenarios. For example, there's some that have to, one, they have to pay back their debt. And so they're mm-hmm. trying to work on paying back their debt. So they're maybe working at a dock in the box, so to speak. I don't mean that badly, but, you know, just working something where they can earn some money. And then the other thing is, the versatility of movement. You know, I've had some that they want to come in, but then they're marrying somebody that has a job in another city. And so they would love to practice here, but they're going to be moving. And so I've encountered that a couple of times, or somebody that has to pay back military, because we're a big military city here, you know, and so some of them are here and they need to pay back their military duty and now they're going off. And so it's those type of things that you have to, the realities of life that you have to deal with. And so I think, It has to be give and take. It has to be win-win. It has to be, how can I help you to help me?
Right.
And I think if you do that, I mean, it's possible. And you just have to find that right person that's going to be in there with you. So,
yeah. And one of the other things that you're also on the forefront is I've watched it, you know, the organizations you're part of, they're working hard to try to connect with the younger dentists. We've got all these younger, you know, these programs to embrace some of the younger. How well are those taking shape? Are they gaining some teeth, you know, with the ADA and some of the state meetings I've noticed? What are you seeing on that front?
Well, you know, being that I'm, like, I'll be chairing the San Francisco meeting next year for the ADA. I'll be chairman of that ADA-FDI meeting. And we are now holding the young dentist, it used to be called the young dentist meeting, but now it's the new dentist meeting. It's being held in conjunction with the American Dental Association meeting. So it's like a meeting within a meeting. And they have their own keynote speakers, and they have their own kind of track as far as lectures and that's and such that would be beneficial to somebody who is new at dentistry. And so that has been, I think, a positive thing. The as the reps and the new dentist reps that were that are on our committee, they seem to be focused on making sure that those things take off. It seems to be working well. Back when I was a young dentist and we had the big young dentist conference apart from the ADA, you know, you had to, there's just a lot of meetings, you know, and it's sometimes I'm meetinged out, you know, and you have so many meetings you have to go to. But, and it's hard nowadays for a young dentist to travel to a venue, especially if you've got finances that are tough. So we try to make the best we can to keep the cost lower for them to be able to get them to come, because it's an experience. It's a relationship of other young dentists to be able to sit and talk with each other and see what's working well with you. They're having these things called fireside chats. I think that's awesome. So you go to a dental
meeting. So they do it at the ADA or just all the meetings?
At the ADA with the young dentist. So what they do is they go and they, let's say they go listen to Kirk Barron and say, and then they finish and Kirk has given them all this great stuff in your lecture. And then they said, you know what? And then Kirk goes outside and sits with them in a little fireside chat. And you sit in these little, these couches, and then we do a little bit more one-on-one and to see how are you doing it, because sometimes that intimidation of large rooms and getting up to speak, and you know, it's, and not everybody wants to hear the same question, but these fireside chats are just really remarkable for bringing people together and being able to discuss those things that are most weighing on you, or those things that are burning in your heart. And from whatever lecturer or person that you're encountering at these dental meetings. So
yeah,
it's a great opportunity.
It's a golden opportunity. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world, and nor do I have any talents. But like when it was early in our phase, and when Sarah and I were, you know, dating, I would just go to these meetings. And a lot of times just being there, I don't know who said it, but 90% of success is just showing up.
Absolutely.
Being at these. I remember telling Frank Spear, I had no money. Like we were just he's like, just come in. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. And I remember sitting in the condos at Panky C1, Irwin invited me down. And he didn't charge me anything, and I got to hang out in the condos. Now, I wasn't a dentist, so I was able to hang out. And those were such valuable experiences. And I guess if you're a young dentist watching this, the lesson is that a mentor doesn't find you. You just got to put yourself in an arena.
Absolutely.
Or a place where it lends itself to a great conversation, and then follow up with people. You know, I remember writing, I took the same course as you, how to put your practice in the top 10. And the first time I went, I was forced to go and I didn't want to go. And so I loved the course. And at the end of the course, I wrote Pete Dawson a letter. Guess what he did? He wrote me back. Like, I still have it to this day. I put it in plastic and he wrote me this. It wasn't a long letter, but it was a little card. It was like 5 sentences. I'm like, the dude wrote me back, and it was so cool. And I've got it saved. And I think that's the important piece, is that just show up and you'll find that most people have a good heart. You know, if these people have been on the circuit, or if they've been great educators, they want to give back. They enjoy it. Bill Robbins is one of my favorite, who's a mutual friend of mine. Bill reminds me all the time, Kirk, you know what our responsibility is? I'm like, what? He's like, it's to leave the campfire in better condition than we found it.
Absolutely. It's,
and I tell the kids that all the time, and they're like, Dad, we don't camp. And I'm like, that's not the point. You know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, my funniest real quick Pete story was that I played golf with Pete here in San Antonio. And so we were playing, you know, just a little friendly game of skins, and I won $5 off of Pete Dawson. And so he gave me a $5 bill, and I said, oh, this is awesome. Can you autograph it for me?
That's
and
awesome.
He said, and he goes, you mean you're not going to spend it? I go, no, I'm going to frame it. And he goes, well, then let me write you a check. Because he didn't have to come out $5 on his side. I said, no, I want the $5 bill. So I have one from Bill. I have Bill Bryant, a $5 bill from Bill Bryant, and a $5 bill from Pete Dawson. But these are the guys, Bill Bryant, who was up in Dallas, one of the cadre of Panky, and Pete Dawson. These are the guys that, like you said, you come out, I can't afford it. Well, then you come in and just come in here and be with me. How can I help you? And they would never turn you down. They would never turn you down. And that's the mentor that you're looking, that you need. Now, I will tell you this, millennials, young dentists, new dentists are looking at continuing education in a totally different mindset. They're looking at on social media. They're doing YouTube. They're doing all these other things that they can go through. Well, we're doing it right here, right now, you know, just get some information. But so to go to the, to attend these meetings, we're seeing just a little decline all around the entire nation. And not as many young dentists or new dentists are coming out to these meetings. But that's the place, those meetings are the place where you can go and work with each other and get to meet these people. And I remember the first time I went to Chicago and I went to the American Academy of Restorative Dentistry, got up there, or Crown Ridge Prosthodontics. I got up there and I'm just looking at these, you know, Schaefer, Hein, and Levy, the guys that wrote our book. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at, oh my God, these are the guys that wrote the book. They're sitting here. Mm-hmm. And to be able to meet them one-on-one and know that they're just good people that want to be able to give back. And I think that's what we need to look for.
Amen, brother. I always want to know from great influencers, great people, this, what do you think the profession is going to look like in the future? Give me your best, it's anyone's guess, but tell me what dentistry looks like in the next 2, 3, 4 years in this respect.
Well, I tell you what, the things that I'm doing now, I mean, I look at what I do now compared to what I did then when I started in 1983. I know I look 35, I know, but...
You look great.
Thank you, I appreciate it. It just... I need powder.
Anyway, hey, you got hair on the sides. I don't have it anywhere, man.
But I look at, you know, I'm using a scanner now. You know, I'm scanning my crown and bridge impressions now. I'm using the implant systems that we're using, the immediate, the all on fours, the dealing with airway issues that would never found. You know, you say, oh, you grind your teeth. Let me give you a night guard. Those type of things, and the education that I've taken just to get to the point where I practice now. I only see the technology just blossoming as to what it's going to be in the next 4 or 5 years. I just want to keep up with it. I'd say the half-life of dentistry is about 7 years. So half of what I know 7 years from now will be obsolete. And so I think those are the kind of things that you need to be prepared for. I think there's always going to be room for the fee-for-service practice dentist, without a doubt, because people seek that. I'm not, if I have a cardiology issue, I'm not going to find somebody who's on my plan just to say, well, just because you're on my plan. I want to find the very best. And people always seek out the best. I mean, when you go to a restaurant, you want the best food. You want the best service. It's my practice is all about customer service. Yeah. You seek that out. The people that set themselves apart are the ones that are going to be successful. The ones that, if you're a drill 'em, fill 'em, bill 'em dentist, you know, you're just going to be another puzzle piece. And you're never going to answer that question as to being the very best. You got to set yourself apart. Dr. Cochran, who I said, the guy that influenced me the best, he said, you know, you may not make $1 million at being a dentist, but you'll have a nice lifestyle. Nice lifestyle. You'll live well. He goes, but you got to be able to do what you need to do. You got to walk the walk. You got to talk the talk. You got to do it. And that's getting out there and shaking the bushes every day. There's some days I walk in here and I go, I'd rather be home. Mm-hmm. But there's some days I come in here and I say, I can't wait to do this. You know, I was doing this case. I was doing a case the other day. And I was trying to find the opening of an old crown that Richard Hunt had done in North Carolina, an implant crown. And he had cemented this crown. It was beautiful, except it was a little wiggly. And I was sitting there. I was trying to find the opening so I could go back and tighten it down. And I told the patient, I said, let me ask you, is it wrong that I'm really excited about doing this today on you? And he was like, did you sleep last night? I said, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get to see you today so I could do this on you. And he was like, boy, you've got something else in your brain. And I was like, no, because I just know I can do this. And so I got in there, it was touchdown. I got in there, I tightened it down, found it. He left. He was happy. I was happy. It was a great experience. So those are the type of things. The patients love you. They become your dental assistants and your team members or chairside, you know, cheerleaders, and they want to just see you do well because they do well too. And your patients are happy. It sounds, you know, like a platonic world, but I tell you what, it is doable, and you have to be excited about it. So
yeah, and part of your excitement, if you're a young dentist watching this right now and you're frustrated or you feel isolated, which is easy to do, that's why you got to get around people like Roger. You get in a room with them, I mean, your energy's contagious, it's authentic, and you know, it's no different than my journey or anybody else's journey. You got to surround yourself with the right people to protect this up here. You go back and be a better husband, better provider, better dentist, better everything. So it's really one of the most important parts of any dentist journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, buddy, I'm so grateful to have you on, man. Stick around, Roger, while we say goodbye to everybody else. We're going to have you back on a whole bunch of other topics. I would love to do the whole implant conversation with you.
That'd
once you get a let's go through the methodology on that. That would be awesome. And if you're watching today, you enjoyed today, just do us a huge favor. Thank you, first of all, for watching. Just hit the share button, share this with your friends, protect this great profession that we call dentistry. If there's things that you want to hear from Roger, I'm going to have him back again and again and again, and I'll ask him the tough questions and have him give us the wisdom from the mentor and the master. So, Roger, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And so until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practice Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Greg.